Good morning, everyone, and welcome to a Parasha Share on Parashat Ki Teitzei, or perhaps not Parashat Ki Teitzei, because the central question that we're going to focus on today, and it's probably going to be a very short idea, but I think a very important idea to internalize. Sometimes this is something I've realized, not every idea needs to take 45 minutes. I tend to be the kind of person who does take 45 minutes to an hour to explain ideas. But sometimes there are just these really like nice, tight ideas that are actually foundational and focal to our appreciation of Torah, to our appreciation of our lives of Jews. And so what I want to focus on today is very much in that mold. It's probably a pretty short idea, but a very, very important one. But it begins with just observing the fact the Parashat Ki Teitzei is one of the most mitzvah-heavy parashiot in the Torah. It literally has nothing but it's a laundry. It's a laundry list of did unnecessary repetition. Then it's a laundry list of laws. That's all it is. Law after law after law. That was the repetition my brain wanted me to do. And this shouldn't really surprise us because we spoke a few weeks ago about the fact that Sefer Devarim has at its core for several parashiot just a long list of laws. And so arriving in Parashat Ki Teitzei, fine, we're now in the midst of all of these laws. Great. In and of itself, that's an important point to note. The fact that Ki Teitzei is just chock full of laws and that's it, and it's one of the most highly concentrated law parashiot in the Torah, fine. But it does raise a very interesting question, which is, if you are Chazal dividing the parashiot, right? We have to remember, this is an important thing I'm sure I've talked about before. Let's take Parashat Bereshit flowing through to Parashat Noach. Where does Parashat Noach begin? And there's a slim chance this will end up being the Parashat Shir for Parashat Noach when we resume after the hiatus. But where does Parashat Noach begin? Eila toldot Noach. Noach ish tzadik tamim haya b'dor tav. It begins by telling us this is the line of Noach, the generation of Noach. When does the story of Noach begin? He's born in the previous parasha. The same is true of Avraham. The story of Avraham begins at the end of Parashat Noach. We have Terach, we have his child Avraham, and then Parashat Lech Lecha begins with us already having been introduced to Avraham. Again, all this is to say that these stories often found within the Torah, or the themes found within the Torah, aren't where you would logically pause and stop, aren't always where the parashiot pause and stop. And so often you can ask a question, not always, but often you can ask a question, a general question. Why does the parasha begin where it begins? There must be some significance. There must be some purpose to choosing to begin a given parasha at location X rather than a few verses earlier or a few verses later. And okay, we can ask that general question about a lot of parashiot, but there are some parashiot like ours this coming Shabbat, Parashat Ki Teitzei, ours this week, where that question seems to be really, really strong. Because the beginning of Parashat Ki Teitzei does not at first glance seem to belong at all to the rest of Parashat Ki Teitzei. So if I will now share the screen. If we take a look at the beginning of Parashat Ki Teitzei, it begins famously and, you know, to our modern eyes, always a difficult mitzvah to parse. But it begins with the laws of the Eshet Yifat To'ah. Ki Teitzei la-melchama alo'ivecha, you're at war, untano Hashem lokecha biyadecha v'shavita shivyo, God delivers your enemies into your hands, you're winning the battle, you're conquering. V'ra'ita v'shtivya eshet yifat tohar, and you see among the captives a beautiful woman, v'hashak davva v'lakacha l'chalisha, you take her, you make her yours, you capture her. This is very much the reality of war for most of human history. We're not going to dwell on the moral implications of this mitzvah this week. V'haveta el toch beitecha, you take her back to, you shall bring her to your house. V'gilecha et rosha, v'asta et ziparneha, you have to trim her hair, pair her nails. V'heisira et simlat shivya me'aleha, you have to discard her captive's clothing. V'yashva beitecha u'vachta et aviha v'et ima yarechinim, she has to mourn for her lost for her parents. V'achar kein. Tavo elaha uvalta, only after that can you take her, can you make her your wife, v'haita alecha le'isha. And it also tells us, v'ayam lo chafat tzabah, if you don't want her v'shilachta le'nafsha, you have to let her away, v'umachor lo timkaren abakasev lo tadamer batachat asherinita, you can't enslave her, you can't sell her, she is free. So again, it's generally, you know, the way this is often argued is that in some ways this is a restraint upon what is otherwise a very morally ambiguous part of war. You can't just, you know, take captive women. You have to, quote unquote, commit to them. But this is how our parasha opens. You'll notice just by looking at the title of this source, this comes from the middle of a chapter in Sefer Devarim. We rarely talk about chapter divisions. And chapter divisions, it's always important to point this out, chapter divisions are not Jewish. It was Christian monks who first divided the Bible into its various chapters with its various numbers. And again, we can ask very similar questions about Parashiyot, about the monks who divided the Torah into chapters, save for we attach less theological significance to their division. We still use chapters to this very day because they are insanely convenient and they provide a universal standard for navigating Tanakh. But you will see that in contrast to Chazal, who broke the Torah at a section just before the beginning of our Parasha Ki Tetzeh, those who divided the chapters in the Torah saw this as the continuation of the previous section. What is that? All that that's saying is the chapters tend to, not always, but they tend to preserve better the actual narrative flow. In other words, Ki Tetzeh, you can make a good argument. It should belong with Parashat Shoftim. It should belong at the end of the previous parasha. It very much seems to be this law here of the Eshet Yifat Toah seems to just be a continuation of what we were reading in Parashat Shoftim. In fact, if we take a look closer at the laws that close Parashat Shoftim, for now, we are going to ignore, though we will come back to it, because we're not ignoring it because it breaks the thesis. We're ignoring it because it's more central to the point I want to make. But for now, we're going to ignore the laws of the Egla Arufa, the body that is found and the ritual that has to surround it in order to absolve the people of guilt for the fact that someone died on their watch. And if we take a look at the other closing verses of Parashat Shoftim, we learn Ki Tetzeh la milchama al oivecha. You'll notice that's literally the exact same way Parashat Ki Tetzeh begins. When you go to war against your enemies, v'ra'ita sus v'arechev, amrav mimcha, you see horses and chariots, don't fear. Again, a little later, towards the end of Parashat Shoftim, ki tikrav el ir, lihilochem aleha, you approach a town to attack it, v'karata elaha l'shalom, you shall offer it terms of peace. Parashat Shoftim ends with the laws of war, going out to battle, besieging a city, a whole law, I need to stop using the term laundry list, a whole bullet-pointed list, doesn't have the same ring to it, a whole list of laws related to war. Surely, Parashat Ki Tetzeh, the beginning of it, belongs in that section. Ki Tetzeh la milchama al oivecha. You're at war. You spot a captive. You want to take him. This is part of the laws of war. After the beginning of Parashat Ki Tetzeh, we drop laws of war. We start now talking about, give me one second, verse 15 of chapter 21, Ki tichyana la'ish shtei nashim, a man who has two wives, and we get the laws that even if the firstborn is the son of the less loved wife, he is the firstborn, he is treated as the most important of the children. And then we also get, beginning verse 18, the laws of the Ben Sora Umora, the defiant son who was put to death for his rebelliousness. Nothing to do with laws of war. Rashi, famously, he does it a lot in Parashat Ki Tetzé. It's surprisingly, quote-unquote, controversial. It's a comment of Rashi that's kind of become standardized and accepted, but it's, you know, some of the comments of Rashi are like, yeah, this is definitely a perfect encapsulation of the parasha. And there are other comments of Rashi where sometimes kind of other commentators come along and are like, this seems a little bit loose. But Rashi quotes the idea that the laws that follow the Eshet Yifat Toha are the consequences of the Eshet Yifat Toha. A man brings a woman in as a captive, and then in the end, he comes to not really love her. He has a child with her. That son is the firstborn son. But because he is the neglected child of the, you know, unloved wife to whom the father bears a certain level of resentment, he ends up becoming the rebellious son, the Ben Sora Umora. It's a moral lesson about, even when the Torah grants you the ability to do something that seems a little bit morally dubious, its end will not be good. But Rashi tries to connect the beginning of Parashat Ki Tetzé to the rest of Parashat Ki Tetzé, but everything about the beginning of Parashat Ki Tetzé really seems to be about the end of Parashat Shoftim. In fact, if we look at the words of Parashat Ki Tetzé, again, Ki Tetzé la milchama al oivecha, when you take the field, you see a captive. The entirety of the beginning of Parashat Ki Tetzé, the Eshet Yifat Toha is second person. When you. And again, if we look at these verses that I'd already quoted that close Parashat Shoftim, when you, it's second person, linguistically. The command of the Eshet Yifat Toha shares a tremendous similarity with the previous mitzvot in the end of Parashat Shoftim relating to war, and far less to the verses that follow the Eshet Yifat Toha. Again, look at the source sheet, look again at the verses that follow, the commands that follow. It's the third person, you know, Kitiyana le'ishtei nashim, a man has two wives. Should a man have two wives? If a man has two, everything is, if a householder has a wayward and defiant son, it's not you do this, you do that. It's should such and such a thing happen, this is what one does. It is the third person. So not only do we have a thematic reason to question why the law of the Eshet Yifat Tohar begins Parashat Ki Tetzé, when it's all about the laws of war, which was exactly the topic of Parashat Shoftim and not the topic of Parashat Ki Tetzé, but we also have strong linguistic reasons to believe that Parashat Ki Tetzé flows from the laws of war detailed at the end of Parashat Shoftim, because it's still in the same voice. The end of Shoftim, the laws of war, are second person. Parashat Ki Tetzé begins in the second person, and then it shifts to third person. If you were turning Parashat Shoftim and Ki Tetzé into a, you know, a TV show or a movie or a play, which it's really not going to track well. This is definitely not the parasha to try to turn into. You know, choose Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus, choose creation, choose Sefer Bereshit. Don't do the laws of Sefer Devarim. But there would be some sort of shift between the very beginning law of Parashat Ki Tetzé and the following ones. There are linguistic reasons to question Ki Tetzé's place at the beginning of a new parasha, when it seems to belong so much at the end of the previous parasha with the laws. And indeed, the strongest argument you can offer is the way in which the Torah frames the laws of war back in Parashat Shoftim. The Torah says that ve'im lo tashlim imach, if the enemy does not surrender to you, va'asta imcha milchama, but will join battle with you, v'tzarta alaha, you lay siege to it, God will deliver it into your hand. Vihikita et kol zuchura lefichare, you put all the men to the sword. Rak hanashim vahataf vahabahema. But however, the women, the children, the animals, v'cholashe yiyevo'ir, kol shlalot havozlach, you take everything that is, you can take all of that as bounty. V'achalter et shlalo ivacha, you enjoy the spoil of your enemy, asher natan Hashem lokech alach, that God has given towards you. The Parashat Shoftim explicitly states a law about taking the spoils of war, including the women of the town. Again, let's not get into the morality of how we understand this nowadays, but the Torah explicitly mentions taking a woman as a spoil of war in Parashat Shoftim, and then lo and behold, just a few verses later, we get the laws of how do you treat further details on. There is almost an asterisk. I'm doing a lot of very fast scrolling, I recognize, as I share the screen. There is almost an asterisk as after it says, you know, after it refers to the Noshim here, taking the women as a spoil of war. And the asterisk now links to, you know, Ki Teitze, the beginning of Parashat Ki Teitze. But it shouldn't be the beginning of Parashat Ki Teitze. It should be the end of Parashat Shoftim. Parashat Ki Teitze should be Parashat Ki Tehyena La'ish. Ki Tehyena. It seems there must be some very specific reason that Chazal sought to start a new parasha with Parashat Ki Teitze. They wanted this parasha to begin in an illogical place. They wanted this parasha to begin in a place that didn't really make a lot of sense. Why? So it lies in understanding, and there's no more actual sources on the source sheet. The rest we're going to kind of talk outside the parasha. I may share the screen once again if I feel it's necessary to once again review the sources. But what is it? What is the significance of beginning Parashat Ki Teitze? So it begins by noting that there is a huge flaw in everything I've just argued. Yes, it indeed does sound like the Torah is all about the laws of war, beginning with standard laws of war and concluding with the laws of spoils of war, taking a woman as a spoil of war. That should all be one section. Wonderful. And then a new section should begin after that. And that should be the start of the new parasha. But there's a huge flaw with that. The Torah interrupts its own laws of war. It's undeniable that the beginning of Ki Teitze belongs to the laws of war. But what's just before it? The Egla Arufa. A body is found mysteriously. No one knows what happens. The elders of the town have to, you know, basically accept guilt for in some sense, being a cause of that, the death of that person. That has nothing to do with war. And yet the Torah interrupts the entire laws of war with this random halacha of how to treat the need for forgiveness after finding a dead body. And so one classic answer is that no, the Egla Arufa belongs with the laws of war, because one is by its very nature the act of war. It's the denial of the sanctity of life. We just read the Torah say, put the men to the sword. The purpose of war is to kill the enemy. That is how you win a war. The problem with such a mentality is it can all too easily create a more general desanctification of life. People start to see life as expendable. Murdering is cool because that's what we do in war. And so the Torah interrupts its laws of war with a lecture on the sanctity of life. If you find a dead body in the middle of nowhere, you are guilty. You are somehow, that's how sacred life is. It's a counterpoint to the laws of war. The Torah expects, it understands, it realizes that during war you have to kill. But you cannot let that comfort with killing other human beings spread into your wider worldview. And so the Torah teaches us the Egla Arufa by at this point in the Torah to really double down on the preciousness of life. There may be a certain moral course in war itself, but that's it. Otherwise, we treat life as precious. We treat it to such a degree of significance that when a dead body is found, there's this whole dramatic ceremony that must be undertaken that really underscores the sanctity, the preciousness of life. It can thus be argued, and I really do like this argument, that what the Torah then does is segues back into the Eshet Yifat To'ar within the laws of war to further this message. I said we weren't really going to talk about the morality of the Eshet Yifat To'ar, but that's because I hadn't double-checked my notes before we begin. But just to say very, very briefly, as 21st century readers, the Eshet Yifat To'ar is very troubling. For an ancient reader, the law of the Eshet Yifat To'ar, I think it can be quite compellingly argued, puts a surprising amount of restraint on the passions of war. Okay, there are some debates over what exactly the contours of the law the Torah is expressing here. But broadly understood, what it's saying is, in the field of war, you still have to restrain your passions. And this is a logical flow from what I just said about Egla Arufa. Torah gives us the laws of war. It interrupts the laws of war to teach us the importance of the sanctity of life. And then it continues the laws of war to teach an additional message, the dignity of every human being. Even in as dehumanizing a scenario as the Eshet Yifat To'ar is, let's not pretend it's some like, oh, if we understand it through the Torah, it's really this beautiful thing. No, it's still horrible. But it is, you know, it is perhaps a concession to the passions of human beings, as it's often explained. But it is an attempt to try and claw some dignity towards this captive person. They are still entitled to go free if you don't like them. And if you do like them, you have to commit. She has to be your wife, not your concubine, not your whatever. This person has to be brought into your household and treated the same way every single other wife is treated. It is an articulation of, in the darkest of moments, there is still an element of dignity that every single person deserves. The soldier is taught, you cannot be selfish. You have to instead respect, however limited this is, the inherent dignity of another person. And so we have the laws of war, which are all about, right? Like if there are two things that take place during a war, it is this. It is the fact that there is no sanctity of life in war. You just murder people left, right, and center. Okay, it's justified, it's the course of war, but it doesn't change the fact that murder is murder. Again, I thank God I've never been to war, but I remember a line in the Israelis in my yeshiva used to say, because I went to yeshiva just after the second Lebanon war, it was the summer of 2006, and the line the Israelis would say is, the only people willing to talk about their experiences in the war are the people who did nothing. Because anyone who would actually, you know, had to kill people, had to do whatever, they don't want to talk about it because it's a horrible thing to do. But nonetheless, wars always risk this desanctification of life. They always risk this treating human beings as simply chess pieces. And so the Torah comes along and says, no, Egla Arufa teaches us life is sacred. Life is precious. And then it comes along and teaches us, furthermore, it's not simply life itself, but human beings are deserving of a modicum of dignity, even in an arena where dignity goes out the window. The Torah is not assigning tremendous amounts of dignity to the spoils of war, but it is at least trying to, you know, claw a sliver of dignity for those captured as spoils of war. It's a further progression of and refinement of this idea that comes straight after the Torah legitimizes and sanctions all of the various horrible things that can take place in war. The Eshet Yifat Toar, in a sense, is simply an application of the general dignity of human beings, and it articulates it at this point. That explains the Egla Arutha being inserted into the middle of the laws of war. What it doesn't explain is why Chazal chose to begin with the very end of the laws of war. Why begin with this Eshet Yifat Toah? Why begin with this law about, you know, giving dignity to human beings, giving way, not giving into one's own selfishness? Why is that the theme that begins Parashat Ki Tetzeh? Why not just tack it onto the end of Parashat Shoftim? And so I came across what I think was a really, really nice answer. He takes it in a slightly different direction, but Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, who I already quoted earlier, but that may have been before I'd hit record. But Rav Moshe Lichtenstein argues that the entire theme of Parashat Ki Tetzeh is the denial of selfishness and the dignity of life as a whole. So obviously not every single one of its 15,000 laws found within captures this theme, but a lot of the main ones do. If you think about, again, the rebellious son, why is the rebellious son put to death? Because they failed to listen to their parents. They're selfish, they're gluttonous, they're greedy, all of these various things. It's a revelation about a person's character and their selfishness, their lack of respect, etc., etc., etc. We have the laws of ma'akeh, the need to put a fence around your roof. A fascinating law. Please God, I will talk about it a little bit more on Shabbos. It's a fascinating law for so many reasons, but at its heart, it's the fact that life is sacred. Make sure you protect it to the best of your abilities. Even a law like Shiluach Hakan, sending away the mother bird, okay, there's a whole question over how much we read ethics into Shiluach Hakan. It's a great controversy and an important topic. But broadly speaking, if we just take it on the surface, it's a recognition that even a bird is due a certain measure of sensitivity. The entirety of Parashat Ki Tetzeh is about, or at least core themes of Parashat Ki Tetzeh are about dignity, are about sensitivity, are about these core themes. And so we begin with Parashat Ki Tetzeh in its place, with the Eshet Yifat Toar right there, because that's the overriding theme of the Eshet Yifat Toar. And it connects, it bridges the previous parasha, the end of Parashat Shoftim, which talks about the laws of war, which risks dehumanizing people. And so we begin Parashat Ki Tetzeh with the statement that articulates, in the darkest of circumstances, in the worst of circumstances, nonetheless, a crucial principle of the Torah. Human beings, even animals, have dignity, need to be treated with sensitivity. Our own selfishness is not a good reason to overwrite that. And as many of the laws of Ki Tetzeh, you know, orbit that same theme, we begin with perhaps the strongest articulation of that idea, not because it's the most bombastic, but because it's the most extreme. Even when you have reached a point where someone barely has any dignity, even when we reach a point where someone is being pretty mistreated, there is nonetheless a sliver of dignity. It is crucial, even in that situation, they are treated as a human being. They are treated in a way that either allows them to become your wife or alternatively is set free. No conditions asked. You're not allowed to enslave them. You're not allowed to sell them. And in doing so, that articulates, even in the most extreme of ways, this general notion of sensitivity, of sanctity, of life, of dignity. And that is why Parashat Ki Tetzeh begins with the laws of the Eshet Yifat Toar.